Well, it's 20 past 12 and we're kind of just going to be moving on to the topic of COVID-19, something I'm sure we could all wish we could just leave behind on this final day of 2020. It was actually a year ago today that the first cluster was discovered, wasn't it? That's why it's COVID-19, not COVID-20. But we're going to be talking about COVID Plan B. And this is a idea that has been, openly discussed in the media a couple of times in the last, since COVID, sort of taking a look at the way that the government has approached COVID, the way our society has, where we've approached lockdowns, and some alternative ideas. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually introduce Dr. Simon Thornley. He is the senior lecturer of epidemiology and biostatistics at the University of Auckland and a contributor to the COVID Plan B document. Simon, how are you?
Good, thanks, Oscar. Thanks for bringing me on the show.
No problem. And I'm also going to, while we're here, introduce a Professor Michael Baker, epidemiologist and University of Otago Professor Michael Baker, today actually named New Zealand Order of Merit for Services to Public Health Science. Professor Michael Baker, how are you?
Good. Kia ora, Oscar.
Good to have you on. I'm really glad to have you both on, actually, because COVID is a really tricky and complicated topic and situation, obviously, as we've all learned over the last year. And dealing with it, how society deals with it, how we deal with lockdowns. So what I thought we would do today, because we have both of you on, is we would essentially have a sort of open form debate and discussion around the Plan B idea, also maybe what we've done as a society, as what we've done, I guess we could call Plan A. And talk a little bit more in depth about what we could be doing better, what we could be doing different, or maybe what, maybe why some of these ideas might not be the right way to go. So I thought we would start by maybe, Simon, you could introduce us to a little bit about Plan B. What is it about? What are the main points that, you know, your average layman like myself would be interested to hear?
Sure. Putting it in a nutshell, we as a nation and the government now face an important choice. Either we continue to lock down and shield behind the border for as long as it takes, which could be many years because the rest of the world will not eliminate COVID-19, or we have the Plan B approach, which is to return to living normal lives within 6 months by opening the border and enabling people to choose how to live and work related to the risk that COVID-19 poses to them. Our focus should be on protecting the vulnerable, particularly those in rest homes and hospitals where about half of fatalities so far have occurred. We know everyone is doing and saying what they think is best for the country. It is shameful that some people have denigrated our efforts. They're trying to shut down alternative views which have already proven correct. For example, 9 months ago, we opposed those who claimed that 3.5 people out of every 100 with COVID-19 would die. The real number has turned out to be, conservatively, about 2.5 out of every 1,000, much closer to influenza. 9 months ago, we also opposed claims that people without symptoms, particularly children, spread the disease. A study of 1 million people in Wuhan, published last month, shows that extremely few asymptomatic people transmit the virus. Despite everything we've faced, that's why COVID Plan B is still here, because the overreaction has driven authorities to exaggerate the risk. We want to help people understand the situation for themselves.
So, with saying that, Professor Michael Baker, I'll bring you in as well to sort of maybe respond to that, and because I know you've been critical of the Plan B idea in the media already. What about that do you disagree with? Do you think might be incorrect from, you know, a scientific perspective or a society perspective? Over to you, Michael.
Sure. Firstly, I think it is great to have a healthy level of debate. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that scientists do draw on the available evidence and form logical conclusions from that. I mean, I think it is quite a fascinating irony that on the 22nd of December, Simon's group published a paper in New Zealand as a letter in a journal of primary care. And that day we published a major review in the British Medical Journal, and we were saying exactly the opposite from the conclusions of Plan B, that the accumulating evidence globally, and we looked at many countries, including New Zealand and Australia in particular, the growing evidence strongly supports elimination as an optimal strategy where countries can achieve it. And it's when you look at the and we have waited really to look at the accumulated data from this year, and it shows that if you look at the major metrics like overall mortality, it's something like 100-fold less in countries pursuing elimination. That's countries like Australia, New Zealand, China and Taiwan, where we've got particularly good data. And also, those countries are performing much better economically. They've really bounced back very quickly. The Chinese economy is now larger than it was last year. Taiwan is expecting it to be in the positive range. And New Zealand and Australia have taken a hit, but it's far less than countries in Europe and North America that are pursuing mitigation and suppression, in other words, trying to live with the virus. So if you look at really, this is real evidence on the experience of countries taking, I think, the elimination approach. They're doing much better. And this paper is now amongst the most downloaded in the world by, you know, the top 1% of downloaded papers. I'm hoping it will have a big impact on countries that are still trying to map their futures. And now with something like 9 vaccines that are approved for open use or limited use, it's going to get that much easier to eliminate the virus over the next few months. So I think the direction New Zealand is on is actually a very sound one. And I guess the question I have for Simon is, at this point in time, how can he, looking at the same data as we are, come to a diametrically opposed view? And also, what direction is he now recommending for New Zealand? Is he saying we should open up and let the virus give it free rein in New Zealand?
Over to you, Dr. Simon Thornley.
Well, I think the critical issue here is the infection fatality ratio. And even the conservative World Health Organization has endorsed the UNEDI study, which currently reports a median infection fatality rate about 2 in 1,000, which is not very different from seasonal influenza. So we need to readjust the threat posed by the virus. It's very clear that for most Kiwis under 70, 99.95% of people who get the virus will survive. For the elderly and those with chronic conditions, the fatality rate is higher, but it's still 95% of people who will get the virus will survive, and that's a very conservative estimate. So when it comes to elimination, my contention is that we're virtually the only country in the world, apart from Australia and Taiwan, that are chasing elimination. And I have to give credit to Michael that we're seemingly doing it successfully at this time. But that means that COVID-19 exists in pretty much every other country that we interact with, and we have to stay shielded from them almost indefinitely. Even if they vaccinate, the virus is still out there. We don't have good evidence that it's going to reduce elimination, reduce transmission of the virus yet. So we're stuck in limbo, perhaps for 4 or 5 years at least, unable to interact with the world. So we need to think about the economic consequences of chasing elimination. Globally, the World Bank is now saying we're facing the greatest recession since World War II. Demand in food banks in New Zealand has doubled or trebled. More than 50,000 adults in New Zealand now in the dole queue since March when lockdowns began. We urgently need a more sustainable approach which adjusts for our current understanding of the virus.
Dr. Simon, I'm going to hold you there just for a second. We will come back to this discussion. We need to go to the headlines. We need to go to the ads. We're going to come back and discuss the economic sides of COVID as well. So we're going to do that now, and we'll be back with you guys next on Magic Talk.
News from NewsHub, New Zealand's number one news source.
Another reminder to stay safe on the roads this summer. The road toll has climbed to 9, more than double that of last season. The AA wants people to wear seatbelts and take their time driving to holiday destinations. Spokesperson Catherine Gaff says the roads will be busier than usual. Smoke is still smouldering from Waikeria Prison, where inmates remain holed up. A standoff is in its third day as prisoners protest what they say are inhumane conditions. Corrections Association President Alan Whitley says the buildings have long been in need of an upgrade. A 19-year-old is still missing in Gisborne after last being seen at the Rhythm and Vines Festival. Fletcher Wong was last seen wearing a black hoodie and shorts and walking out of the admissions area at the festival at 2 o'clock on Tuesday morning. Police are asking for anyone with information to come forward. And New Year's Eve revellers camping in the Lower South Island are being warned of heavy rain. It's expected to reach as far north as Ashburton by tomorrow afternoon. Thunderstorms near Canterbury are also possible. In sport, seven-time Formula One champion Lewis Hamilton has been knighted in the Queen's New Year's Honours list in the UK. The 35-year-old equaled Michael Schumacher's all-time record this year and also was a champion for the Black Lives Matter movement. More from News Hub at 1.
From AM to PM, turn up the conversation on Magic Talk. Garner, Gillies, Richardson.
It's not theft and it's not criminal to have a housing portfolio for your own houses. It's not a crime to own houses.
No,
it's not a crime to build wealth.
Williams.
He never even tried to get the other side of the story. He puts himself about as a journalist and he gets called a journalist by other people in the media. He's no more a bloody journalist than my bum points upwards.
Plunkett.
Let's have an honest discussion about discrimination by size.
Yep,
I think people have certainly in my career and what I do, discriminated against me on the grounds of my weight. Big boned like me.
Rich.
Here's the thing about news. When something is down, you kick it until it bleeds. And when it bleeds, it leads. That's what journalism is. So you can't actually blame the media for following those stories.
Panapa.
A jury consists of people too stupid to get out of jury duty. And this, of course, is not without an element of truth.
From AM to PM. Returning for another year in 2021.
You're a Magic Talk with Oscar today, and we are talking to Professor Michael Baker and Dr. Simon Thornley about basically COVID Plan B and talking about what our approach is, both via the government as a society, to how we manage this disease 1 year on, this virus, 1 year on from the first, you know, cluster discovery in Wuhan. We've been through quite a few lockdowns. Not as many as many places overseas have been going through, but we've been through a lot as a community, and we're currently as a country being hailed as a kind of an example of a country doing it right from lots of places around the world. So we have Dr. Simon Thornley and Professor Michael. Dr. Simon Thornley, the Senior Lecturer of Epidemiology and Biostatistics at the University of Auckland and a contributor to COVID Plan B, and Professor Michael Baker, epidemiologist from the University of Otago. So Simon, you started to bring up just before we went to the ads the economic impact of what COVID has had on our society. Michael, when going through Plan B, what was your sort of summary or your take on their stance on the economics of COVID-19?
Well, firstly, no one wants lockdowns, and we can't compare. You have to choose your counterfactual. In other words, what would be the alternative to what New Zealand did? And we're saying that the elimination strategy is the least bad choice. And if you look internationally, countries that are pursuing alternatives, which is really mitigation and suppression, are doing much worse. So we can't somehow pretend that the pandemic isn't here and we'll go back to life as it used to be, because that's not an option. But overall, and I'm just looking at the latest Treasury forecasts, are very positive for the New Zealand economy. And it's had its, I think it's largest ever, a rebound in the September quarter by 14%. And the On the annual basis, the GDP is expected to contract by 2.2%, which is actually very good by world standards. You only have to look at the UK. And in fact, I guess the question I'm going to ask Simon in a minute is, where would you rather be living and what country has got it right? Because if you look at just the news yesterday and today, the UK has got such a grim outlook. It's in a very intense lockdown. The pandemic is threatening to overwhelm its health system, and their GDP is forecast to contract by about 10%, so five times more than New Zealand. China, which is also, mainland China, protecting 1.4 billion people almost totally from this pandemic. So large countries with long borders can also succeed. The economic growth is looking at about 1.9%, the IMF estimate. And you listen to accounts from Wuhan, where life is largely returning to normal for most people. So I know where I'd rather be. I'd rather be in New Zealand or Australia or Taiwan or potentially even mainland China. And I should say, actually, there's about 10 other countries in Asia that are also pursuing elimination. A country like Vietnam, Mongolia, Thailand, Cambodia, Laos, and also Hong Kong and Singapore are largely succeeding. I mean, you do have setbacks. Another thing I want to correct about the Plan B discussion is about the use of lockdown. New Zealand's used lockdown probably smarter than any other country in the world by doing it very sharply and briefly. And if you look at the Oxford Stringency Index, which actually lists data for lockdowns across the globe, we're at a level of 36, which is just an indicator they've got there. And that's the lowest, amongst the lowest in the OECD, our average lockdown intensity this year. It's less than Australia and the UK and Canada. So actually, we're using lockdown less than other countries. So I guess the question for Simon is, who's got it right? I know at different times Plan B has said, oh, we should follow Sweden. Then it was Australia. I think they then mentioned Iceland. I would like to know from Simon what the alternative reality is that he's favouring at the moment.
Sure. Well, we have suggested that Sweden and Iceland, who never locked down, have taken the more measured approach to the virus, and they've taken this as a sustainable approach, balancing the whole of their economy, the whole of their society, and the aspirations that they have in that country, in those countries. So they've looked to keep their societies as open as possible. They've looked to take a more measured approach to the virus. So those are the examples that I look to. In terms of lockdowns, there's over 20 studies, reputable studies now, that show that lockdowns don't work to contain the virus. So many of these areas of the world which look like they're heading for disaster, much of that is related to the political and the policy response to the virus rather than the virus itself.
I guess, Simon, though, when taking the perspective of, say, and I don't want to paint with a broad brush, but just say your average New Zealander right now, I mean, it's summer, we've just had Christmas, people have been able to spend Christmas with their families, people are at their festivals throughout the summer, New Year's, no one's locked down right now, we don't have COVID in our community. And I guess the point that Michael Baker is sort of coming to you with is, if we weren't taking the stance that we have been, would we be in this position now? And I think trying to change tack now, I think, is going to be a really hard sell to your average New Zealander.
Sure, yeah. Well, I think at some point, as a member of the global economy, as we look for a sustainable position with this virus, we will need to think about opening up our borders and and not locking down in the future and learning to live with the virus, as many other countries are learning to do. Sure, we have some benefits. As Michael pointed out, our stringency is less than some other countries that have had ongoing lockdowns. But we are still living with the spectre of lockdowns. We're seeing just over in Australia, for example, community transmission again in New South Wales and Melbourne. And the threat, the spectre of lockdowns, we've had that, that's been discussed over summer for New Zealanders, that if there's more community transmission, we're still looking at regional lockdowns. So I think we need to readjust to the threat posed by the virus. It's very clear now that mortality from COVID is, the age of death with COVID is about the same as we observe with natural mortality, and that the virus is not as severe as we initially thought. Also, there's positive aspects in terms of how we treat COVID. Hospital mortality in New York, for example, has dropped by 70% since the beginning of the pandemic. We also, for example, know that some policies are absolutely disastrous, which were enacted early in the pandemic in several regions, because we were busy locking down the whole of society rather than protecting the most vulnerable from the virus, particularly those in rest homes and hospitals. So we can do much better focused protection of people who are really at risk from this virus. We don't need to look at locking down the whole of society as we have done. And we know that this is economically disastrous. And Michael talked about the positive aspects of New Zealand's economy, but it's quite clear that we've spent $50 billion on the virus this year. This is the fastest, most dramatic spend of public money I've seen in my lifetime. And that's going to have economic effects on New Zealand for some time to come, including effects on our children, who will one day have to pay this all back.
Very interesting points. I think what we'll do now is I'm going to take another break, and we will come back to you guys and we'll ask some more questions around, I guess sort of what Dr. Simon was just pointing out there is, is COVID not a bigger existential threat to the livelihoods of those as we initially thought, back in March? Are we in a position now where maybe we can be a little bit more risk averse to perhaps not crush businesses, to not bring our entire country and economy to a complete standstill? It's hard to think about that now that we are all open and free to do what we want because we don't have community transmission. But like we have seen, that's not a guarantee. Things can still get through the border, and that threat of lockdowns is still upon us. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that next here on Magic Talk as we have this COVID Plan B debate with Dr. Simon Thornley and Professor Michael Baker next on Magic Talk.
Make your comments heard.
Text Magic Talk
3920.
Before you head to the beach this summer, make sure you know where to evacuate if there's a tsunami. If you feel a long or strong earthquake, wait for the shaking to stop and then move to the highest ground out of all tsunami evacuation zones or as far inland as possible. Go immediately and stay there until you've been given the all clear. Always remember, if an earthquake is long or strong, get gone. Visit getready.govt.nz.
Who would be among the happiest people in Thames? Those living at Richmond Villas Lifestyle Village.
I love the location because it's easy to walk into town.
We wanted to stay on the Coromandel and this is the best move we ever made.
And I just love watching the men come and mow the lawns. It's fabulous.
Richmond Villas, the well-located lifestyle village within walking distance to everything you need. It's the place you're happy to call home. Make an appointment to view the new apartment block today. Google Richmond Villas Lifestyle Village.
Your windscreen plays a huge part in holding your roof up in an accident, but only if it's fitted correctly. You know Novus will do it right, so you know to ask your insurer for them.
Oh, Novus!
Whether you're a parent, educator, young person, or just want some advice on how to stay safe online, NetSafe have you covered. Check out NetSafe's online safety parent toolkit. Read the Staying Safe Online guide and get their helpful tips. NetSafe are there to help you stay safe on the internet while being free, confidential and available 7 days. Be kind, be there for one another and be safe online. Head to netsafe.org.nz.
Sick of getting ghosted online?
Here's some advice from 50/50 Cafe friends.
If
you're
getting
non-stop
notifications
from
someone
super social,
you
don't
have to
hurt
their
feelings
by
going
ghost.
You can hit the pause button.
Pause. Meet in the middle with someone new for 50/50 coffee.
Join today and see who's free in your area.
50/50cafefriends.com.
When it comes to sport, you can trust Players Sports to have all the right advice.
Contact, penalty pass.
Psst, hey, Tash, Mike here from Players Sports. Try this new netball and you've got the height advantage over that goalkeeper. Use it.
All right, got it. Thanks, Mike.
Players Sports. They know sport. For advice on sports equipment, specialist footwear and official apparel, shop online at playersports.co.nz.
The MediaWorks Foundation's community support program helps hundreds of local community-based charities each year that are doing bright things that make New Zealanders shine. Partner with MediaWorks and help create positive change. MediaWorks.co.nz/MediaWorks Foundation.
Take the cricket everywhere this summer with Rover. Download the app. Now,
Magic Talk 0800 844 747.
You're on Magic Talk with Oscar today, and we are having a debate between Professor Michael Baker and Dr. Simon Thornley about Plan B, COVID Plan B. What is it? Is it a good idea? Is it something that, you know, is really feasible and tangible when right now on summer we're all free to do what we want pretty much to a full extent, and we live in a basically COVID-free society as it stands. So Michael, we're taking on from what Simon was saying just before the break, and I think what is you know, a fair question as well is that, you know, is COVID as a bigger threat as we originally thought? I think we've kind of come to the agreement that that health-wise, public health-wise, it's not the biggest killer that we were all scared that it might be. Is there any way that in through what they've outlined in Plan B that that might be a more reasonable approach to managing COVID? Let's say that slips through the border again and we've got another cluster in Auckland tomorrow. Is there a way that Plan B could be an actually implementable approach? It would be more reasonable, less controlling of society, less shutdowns. Is that something that is possible in your mind?
Well, I think all the points I've been making are saying that when you look across the globe, countries pursuing Plan B are doing much worse than those pursuing Plan A. I think we've just published all that data in an international journal. I think it's overwhelming. And I don't think if you look at the comparison between countries like the UK that is trying to live with the virus and a country like New Zealand that has said it does not tolerate it at all, I think the evidence speaks for itself, just the circumstances people are living in. I want to pick up on some things that alarmed me about the Plan B paper that was just published in December. And it's one of the reasons I actually have decided to comment on it. I mean, it has statements like vaccines may never eventuate and a vaccine being at best 4 years wait. I mean, that's at a time when the world is rolling out vaccines at a record rate, and there's something like 9 approved vaccines for varying levels of use.
Hundreds of thousands of people getting them. We need to stop you right there, Michael. We wrote an addendum to the paper that was written because the paper was written several months ago when vaccines weren't out, and so we didn't have the option. Obviously, medical publishing takes some time. It took several months for the paper to be published, and so we were offered the opportunity to write an addendum, which discussed the fact that vaccines are now a reality. And, we see vaccines as an astonishing advance, and it's wonderful that they are available. But we know that they only reduce the rate of infections in mainly healthy adults in trials, and we don't know how they protect the frail elderly who are the ones that are really at risk from catching COVID. And we don't know whether they actually protect people from being hospitalised or dying. And as Jacinda Ardern has pointed out, they don't stop transmission, or at least we don't know that yet. The real data relating to vaccines against COVID-19 are still a long time coming. So our original critique of elimination lockdown to wait for a vaccine still stands.
Yep, Michael Baker.
I think your paper paints a very dismal picture for the future, and I think the combination of public health measures like the elimination approach and vaccines means I think we'll see the world steadily opening up over the coming year. One of the things we can certainly plan to do, I think, is move towards quarantine-free travel with Australia and Pacific Islands, hopefully in the next 3 months. Vaccines will just make the elimination approach much more effective. And these vaccines are not just averagely good. They're not like influenza vaccine. Some of these vaccines appear exceedingly effective. So if you get coverage of 70% plus with vaccines that have effectiveness of, some of them are reporting the range of 90 to 95% effective, and they are likely to interrupt transmission, or at least, at the very least, they'll protect the most vulnerable. I think we can look forward over the next 1 to 2 years to a high level of protection for vulnerable people in the world. So I just think the Plan B model is very depressing about these options. A second area where I'm very concerned about their main message is comparing COVID-19 to influenza. And if you look at the data systematically, COVID-19 is 15 to 20 times more dangerous for people. The infection fatality risk that Simon referred to before, in countries with an older age structure, that's high-income countries, is around 1%. In low-income countries where they've got a much younger population, it's about 0.2%. It's much less. And it's just because older people are far more vulnerable. If we had an uncontrolled pandemic in New Zealand of COVID-19, over a period of a couple of years, it could kill perhaps 12,000 people or so. It's not quite in the league of the 1918 flu pandemic. It's slightly under half the impact. It's still a pandemic you wouldn't want to have, and it would be particularly severe for Māori and Pacific people in New Zealand. So I think that the equity factor was also a major driver for New Zealand response.
I think we could spend a lot of time talking about this, and I am really enjoying the discussion between the both of you, and it's something that if we have some more time in the future, perhaps we can bring up again one day. But I think we've got a couple more minutes for each of you, so I think it would be really good if maybe you could each have a little closing statement, just sort of rounding out your thoughts and just solidifying your position. So Dr. Simon Thornley, a co-contributor of the COVID Plan B, what are your final comments?
Well, I think we need to readjust to the new information that we have about this virus. This virus is not as lethal as we initially feared. We need a sustainable approach which focuses on returning people to living normal lives and opening up the border and to the risk, people adjusting to the risk that COVID-19 poses to them. We need to protect the vulnerable, particularly those in rest homes and hospitals, and that's where we should focus our efforts.
And Professor Michael Baker, your final thoughts?
Well, I think the options are visible to everyone in the world now that countries pursuing elimination are doing very much better than those that are trying to live with the virus. And you only have to look at the media and the grim outlook for countries where the pandemic is raging on uncontrolled. I think the elimination model has really been a world-leading strategy. It's now protecting a large chunk of a large proportion of the world's population across Asia and the Pacific region. I think the evidence speaks for itself. It is the preferred way forward. It is sustainable. We can, with vaccines and, I guess, a continued smart use of the approaches we've got, I think we can look forward to gradually opening up the world over the next 1 to 2 years. So I'm very optimistic about the direction New Zealand's taking.
Thank you very much, Professor Michael Baker and Dr. Simon Thornley there, having a pretty open and very informative debate, I guess you could call it, about COVID Plan B and I guess around our country's response as a total. It's been one hell of a year. I think we can all agree on that. And on a human level, I think, you know, there's a lot of praise overseas that we see in the media of, you know, of New Zealand's response to COVID. And I think as someone who, I guess, it's so hard to really form an opinion on it, I think, for myself, because I fully hear what Dr. Simon Thornley is saying, and that, you know, we can't lock down, you know, locking down over and over and over again. And that was, I think, the fear after that first lockdown was, and really kind of validated in the second lockdown was, oh my God, how many times are we going to do this? How many times can we afford to actually do this as a country? What negative effects is this having outside of what COVID can do? But then I also sit here now on the last day of 2020, the sun's out, people are cracking out beers, having a good time. We're all spending time with our family and our friends. And it's really hard to imagine that if we do have another breach at the border or wherever it comes through. And, you know, I think Ashley Bloomfield said at one point during the year, right before that next cluster in Auckland, was it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. If that's still the case, then do we take this alternative approach where we sort of let the thing in, but we try to risk manage, look after the elderly and those who are at higher risk, and just live with the virus rather than go for elimination? Really interesting points from both. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. You can text them through to 33920. We're actually going to move on next. I might maybe.